Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
I'm HRN's Communication Director, Kat Johnson, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. We're exploring the future of eating animals, and we're going beyond typical meat sources.
If you look at the length of human history, we've been eating insects a lot longer than we haven't been in the United States and Western Europe.
We're looking at unusual ways to purchase meat.
People are like, really? Why would I want to buy that out of a machine?
And we introduce you to Frank Reese, a poultry farmer whose traditional farming methods are featured in a new documentary.
I'm a fourth generation farmer in Kansas, and I focus basically all on standard bred poultry and have my whole life.
He's kind of the last one standing with these rarefied breeds that are so important for if we're going to eat chicken and turkey into the future. He's essential. He's a national treasure.
Listen to Meat and Three this week to better understand the history and the future of meat. Available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still mystery for many people, so I'll try to demystify this in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Dan Tominaga, who is the chef owner of the modern Japanese restaurant, Another Sea, in Kyoto. And Dan's background is very interesting. He grew up in the Long Island and trained as a cook at traditional Kyoto kaiseki restaurants, as well as at the more dynamic New York City restaurant. Now, at his elegant 8-seat restaurant in Kyoto, he expresses his unique background and experience on his beautiful dishes. So today we'll discuss how Dan became intrigued by Japanese cuisine, how his bicultural experience formed his original style of cooking, and why it is important for him to cook in Kyoto, and much, much more. By the way, today we are pre-recording this episode because Dan is visiting New York from Japan to cook a special dinner at Finger Lakes on June 17th and 18th. So quickly before we introduce Dan, Japanese is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japanese. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. And you can email us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. Now let's start our conversation with Dan Tominaga. Hello, Dan. Welcome to Japanese.
Hello. Thank you.
So you just got here. You must be a little jet lagged, but you look great.
Yeah, I'm having a great time. I just got to New York yesterday. Yeah.
And the first time in how many years?
7 years.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about your background.
Sure.
So I heard you were born in Hyogo Prefecture, which is near Kyoto, and raised in Long Island, New York. So at what age did you come to New York?
I came to New York when I was 10 years old, I was fifth grade. Mm. And went through and graduated high school and went back to Kyoto.
Mm. Was a cultural adjustment necessary?
There was a lot of, yeah.
Right. And then, naturally, you went to school, local school. So what did you eat when you grew up in Long Island?
Well, in school, I bought food in cafeteria like all the other people do. Mm. And my mom was the owner of a Japanese grocery store in Long Island.
Oh.
So, yeah, I was very close to cooking and the food scene. And not like the food scene, but like, yeah, I used to bring back all the leftover ingredients and cook for myself. And I have three older brothers, and I was the youngest one. So I used to cook for my brother as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that's maybe the foundation.
I think so, yeah.
Mm, interesting. So then you decided to become a chef. How so? It's just a continuation of cooking for your brothers?
Well, yeah, that's the beginning, but like I had a friend who was originally from Kyoto, And we always talk about like cooking. And he introduced me to this temple called Daitokuji in Kyoto after I graduated high school. And I was not up to going to college at that time, so I decided to do the cooking. And I had a lot of offers from the restaurant in New York. But since I grew up in New York, I had a lot of love and interest in Japan. Mm. And I thought Kyoto was the right place to learn about tradition.
Mm.
And as a Japanese boy who did not know a lot about Japan, I just decided to go to Japan right after, a day after the graduation of the high school.
Really? Yeah. Wow, interesting. So, but without formal training mm-hmm. at the culinary school or, you know, any kitchen, you just decided to go to Kyoto.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think so hard. I just went through what people offer me to do.
Mm.
And that was to go to the temple. And as you know, in the temple, there's a lot of connection with the tea ceremony.
Mm.
And the tea ceremony has a lot of connection with the Kaiseki place. So I didn't know anything. So I just asked. I just went through what people told me to do.
Wow. Right. And, you worked at a traditional, super traditional kaiseki mm-hmm. restaurants in Kyoto called Kibune Hiroya.
Yeah.
And the Nihon Ryori Sakuragawa.
Yeah.
So how did you find them?
Oh, they're just great. And I respect them. I still respect them from deep in my heart right now.
Right.
And
my question was a little clear. So I want to get there. But how did you find the positions at... Because it's hard to imagine you find a place coming from mm-hmm. New York and then you just knock on the door and they give you the job or
Yeah, actually that's what it is from the beginning, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Knock on the door and like the pictures, my resume has a kind of long hair, but the going hair with my head shaved and just like I have nowhere to go back, and I'm here from New York just to learn about Japanese food. And I'm not asking for a lot of money or anything, nothing. Just enough to make my living.
Mm.
And I just want to learn. That's how I started.
Wow. So that sounds very old style, and it still
is.
Worked.
It is. And the old style that old people like.
Mm. Right. So the first you worked at the Kibune Hiroya.
Yeah.
Right. So that's northern part of Kyoto. Mm-hmm. And what kind of restaurant was it?
It's mostly they don't use the seawater fish. It's a river fish, and it's high in the mountain,
mm.
and they're very popular for the summertime. So Kyoto is a very hot place in the summertime. So people escape to those northern part of in the mountain. Where the rivers, they put the terrace on top of the river called Kawadoko.
Mm.
And you put the feet inside the river and get chilled and you enjoy the dinner there. That's like their style,
right.
Kawadoko
style. I did that a couple of years ago. I went to Kyoto.
Oh, great.
In the middle of the summer.
Right.
Yeah, it's such a special feeling. It's
it is,
refreshing.
It is.
Right, because Kyoto summer is so hot.
It's crazy hot, yeah.
Yeah, so just imagine that running water coming down and then you watch it and there's some fish in the river too. So that's Kamogawa, right? Kamo River.
Yeah, but the way I used to work is more upper part. So it's the beginning of the Kamo River.
Wow, it's even better.
Yeah, so it's so slowly and it's so narrow, not like the Kamo River. It's more close. It's a small river, but it's the beginning of the Kamo River.
Wow. And so what kind of menu they offer?
The popular thing is sashimi-style carp, which is koi no arai carp, and ayu, you call it sweet fish, and you make it look like it's swimming, but it's actually grilled already. And then that's the two popular things in Kibune. Yeah.
Mm, right. So it's a little kind of, there's a zashiki, like a dining style. Like
that's the, right.
How do you explain that zashiki to our listeners?
Well, there's two main things, like a counter, which is a kapo style. You see the people on the counter. And the ozashiki style is they have their individual rooms,
mm.
and the food will be carried on, not by the chef, but with the waitress. It's called Nakai-san.
Mm, yeah. The professional kimono clad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's tummy. But
yeah, and people do, most of the times they enjoy getting the maiko or geiko, which is like, as you know, as a geisha, and you enjoy the entertainment and the food together about 3 hours. And since it's a private room, so a lot of politician or the secret things going on inside those rooms. Very important meeting room in Japan.
So that's one, Kibune Hiroya. And the second place you worked at, Nihon Ryori Sakuragawa. So what kind of restaurant was it?
It's a counter, only 11 people. And it's just 11 seating a night. And most of the people, the co-worker, I work together at the same time. They all have Michelin star, from three Michelin star, two and one. And the Sakuraga itself has one star. And it's a great restaurant to begin with. But the great timing I was in, worked with the great people, who is the very, which is like the most stars in Kyoto right now.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the time I brew, got all the connection. That's why I have all the connection in Kyoto now.
So sounds like probably that's the beginning of a Michelin introduced to Kyoto.
Yeah, it's very beginning, like the first year.
And I heard at the very, very, even before the first year, Kyoto chefs rejected Michelin.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is true or not, but a lot of people say, what does Michelin know about Kyoto food? They're still like that, but they appreciate it. Kyoto is a very traditional place, but at the same time, very like the new things. Yeah, they welcome new things very well, so.
Right. So sounds like the Nihon Ryori Sakuragawa sounds like your, similar to your restaurant, that's a style-wise.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll get there in a minute. But what did you learn from the two Kyoto kitchens?
What did I learn from them? Trying to do what people like and to be popular or too famous is one thing, but to do the best you can do. I mean, it sounds so easy, but do what you do is most important thing to you.
Mm-hmm.
So bring out 100% is very difficult in regular days. It's everyday thing. But that's what you have to do to make people happy.
Consistency.
Yeah, consistency. And the best thing, your best performance every day, not one day, not 2 days, but every day. And that's that you have to work harder.
The reason you chose Japanese cuisine versus Italian or French, which is interesting because I think the culinary schools in Japan are really having trouble gathering students for Japanese cuisine because of difficult training and discipline. And so what do you chose to do it?
Yeah.
And that comes probably with that consistency challenges from dashi and mindset-wise, they're really into training yourself to be consistent.
Yeah, and the reason I picked the Japanese food is, the only reason is that's because I'm Japanese. And there's no rule that Japanese people Japanese cuisine chef can learn Italian or French. You could always learn something. But as the base of it, I want to learn about not only the technique or how to cook Japanese food, but like I wanted to learn about the culture. That's the whole purpose. I went back to Japan.
Right. So in the kitchen, did you find it very hard, almost too traditional or too disciplinary?
I mean, it sounds so hard what I did, but if I think about it, it was all the pleasure I got. Yeah, it's nothing was killing hard. Yeah, right now, at my age now, I teach the younger people too now. But what they told me was a treasure now when I teach the younger people. So it was hard in a way, but nothing can happen unless you experience that.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not. There's nothing special about being in Japanese traditional kitchen because any other kitchen can be tough and challenging. Because I'm sure that a lot of American chefs or non-Japanese chefs want to start in a kitchen in Kyoto, for instance. So it's okay as far as you have communication skills. Anybody can. Okay. So, and after you worked in the traditional Kyoto kitchens, you decided to come back to New York and join the Megu in Tribeca. So why did you decide to come back to New York?
Just like, it might be the same reason I went back to Japan when I was 18 after graduating high school. I trained in Kyoto for 5-6 years. Then the New Yorker mind of me wanted to know about, I was in New York to begin with, but like I wanted to know the restaurant scene. There's a word called food entertainment. And I want to know something like that in New York. And that's the reason I came back to New
York. What is the concept of it, food entertainment?
I mean, I worked in a restaurant called Megu, which is about 200 seatings. And after you overnight, you have 400 seatings a night. And if you stay in the kitchen, you only stick with cooking, like grilling the steak, cutting sashimi. But I had a great position. I was the youngest chef in Megu. And I trained in Kyoto, and I grew up in New York, so I know about Japanese cooking, and I knew about the English, and I knew about how New Yorker feels. So I was like the connection between the front of the house and the back of the house, and there's a little fight going on with the sushi chef and the kitchen chef. So I went to, on my day off, I was a kitchen chef, and on my day off, I put the tie on, I put the sushi chef uniform, and I went to the sushi bar. And like, I'm doing it for free. And so, please teach me and treat me like I'm a trainee. And so I got the kitchen and sushi people together. And the other time, I wore the suit and I was with the sommelier. And I got back of the house and from the house together. And I went to the pre-shift, everyday pre-shift meeting and talked to individual, because there's like 120 employees there. I used to talk to, and then I learned a lot from it. I learned about wine from sommelier, and they let me taste about it. And on the other hand, I can't let them taste it, their food too. And that's the restaurant it should be.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah.
Wow,
I was able to do it because I was the youngest one. I was about 24 years old. And I don't know if I could do it now.
Well, but energy and curiosity and the mindset of connecting people.
And if I do something wrong, they will forgive me because I'm a young one.
Right. But Megu is such a large scale, super high end, and a lot of celebrities visited. So it must be very high tension.
That's where I learned serving and welcoming the guests, not only cooking and send this plate out type of, not those type of thing.
So that is the part of the entertainment.
I think so, yeah.
And hospitality.
Yeah.
Right. So that's interesting because I think Kyoto kitchen and the New York City kitchen, that's the entertainment element, but the omotenashi in Kyoto is hospitality. It's something in common.
It is. And Japanese people talk about omotenashi a lot. But I don't think it's something special about Japan. I think it's omotenashi is all over the world. And if you try to learn from people, you can learn from anybody. And that's the Japanese spirit to begin with. But like few Japanese people forget about it. And you must be Japanese to know about Japan. And that's nothing like that. Because some of the Japanese French chef are number one graded, so does Italian, and so does patissier, and they give us the credit, So, yeah, if you try to learn from somebody, you can learn from anybody. Doesn't matter the position or anything. So I try to learn from. I even tried to learn from you tonight. I mean, today to do this speaking and this show.
Well, hopefully there's something I'm like. Yeah, hold the mic. Then, yeah, so, right. But in summary, what did you learn at Megu?
What did I learn? I mean, to make people enjoy, to make customers enjoy, you have to enjoy yourself. That's I think that's the, I don't know if I learned this at Megu, but I learned this at New York food scene. The people who is entertaining people, they are entertaining themselves. And I, you know, of course, the customers have a lot of curiosity and to what I do. But I have to be more curious about what I do. Yeah.
Well, I know that you described that the Megu kitchen as a kind of battlefield.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So even in the battlefield, you have to have fun.
Yeah. After the battle, maybe hug each other. And maybe you lay with that can of beer in your hand. And yeah.
Wow, you're a great, strong soldier.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I survived it, yeah.
Right. Okay, so we'll take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk about Dan's fascinating restaurant called Another Sea in Kyoto. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Dan Tominaga, who is the chef owner of a modern Japanese restaurant, Another Sea, a charming eight-seat restaurant in Kyoto. So after working at Megu as a head chef, I think, right? Yeah. So you were the head chef, and you returned to Japan again in 2009. So why was it?
I had an opportunity to open up my first restaurant in Kyoto. So, yeah, that's the reason I went back.
So you were invited by someone?
Yes, there's a good place and to open up a restaurant. Ichigo Ichie. It was a timing and a place and my age. It just happened to be in Kyoto at the time.
So Ichigo Ichie is just one time,
yeah.
Never again opportunity. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so the restaurant you opened was in Kyoto Nishijin. Mm-hmm. It's a Nihon Ryori, the Japanese Takara.
Takara, yeah.
Right. So what kind of restaurant was Takara?
I opened up when I was 28, and I was still young at the time. And I was like, I was going to do New York style, modern Japanese, but totally different from what I'm doing right now. It's like that. Yeah.
That's funny though. So before the show, we're talking about modern Japanese concept. Yeah. So, and we are saying there's no modern Japanese in Japan. So can you just elaborate on that?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of modern Japanese restaurants, just like Megu or other great restaurant in U.S. or Europe. There's a lot, and people love it. But when I came back to Japan, nobody know about modern Japanese in Japan. They were like, "What is modern Japanese?" And so that's why, I thought it was a great thing to begin modern Japanese restaurant in Japan, especially in Kyoto.
It's a To me, when we talked about this earlier, I was, wow, that is true because people have very strong idea about Japanese cuisine, so they don't mess with it.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of modern, and the modern thing is not light. It's as more important, it's the same, weight, it has same weight as like the tradition. Mm. When you talk about modern jazz or modern art, and it's as great as tradition things.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right. So actually, I was looking at all the reviews of Takara. Mm-hmm. Even if it's closed now, mm-hmm. You can find things. And some reviews said this is a very Kyoto style French. Mm-hmm. Some people called it French.
A lot of people called it French at the time, yeah.
Mm. Right. So it's what kind of dishes did you, for instance, like a couple dishes you can
Well, like the signature dish was like the grilled vegetable with the white miso banya powder.
Mm.
Sauce, things like that. And I always used steak, Satsuma Wagyu. Mm. Beef steak, and I still do. Mm-hmm. And I started using this when I was in Megu, so I've been using almost the same beef almost for 15 years now.
Mm.
But yeah, so I had a steak and the banya powder and those little, yeah. I mean, I was creating things at that time, So I wasn't doing from my heart. I was thinking, and I was sitting on the table thinking about menu, what's fun and what's unique, and I was going too much of fun and unique, not thinking about what I want to do.
Exploring.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibilities.
Yeah.
Mm. So so that's why you closed Takara in 2014?
That's right, yeah.
Mm. So then you opened a new restaurant, mm-hmm. which is your current Another Sea.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the concept of Another Sea?
Another Sea is a... Well... I can't show you this in the radio, but sea is the other way around. And if you have the sea like this, sea is a character with the circle, with the empty part. And if you open your finger wide, you can read this as a sea.
Mm.
You can read this as a sea, the small one. And to fill up the empty part of the sea, you need another sea, which is another other way around.
Mm.
So if you are the sea with the big empty part, I'd be a big C to fill up your empty part. And if you're the C with the small empty part, I'd be a little C to fill up your empty part.
Mm.
So you are the C, I'm another C, and you and I will complete the night.
Wow.
Mm. And then I don't go too forward and I don't go too back, just enough to fill up your empty part.
Mm. So that empty part can be Japanese element, the New York element?
Yeah.
Mm.
And some people come to a restaurant. Everybody come to a restaurant for different reason.
Mm.
Some people come for a tour. Some people come for date, for anniversary. And some people come here for because they're stressed out. They have nothing good in their life. They want to eat something good and have fun.
Mm. That works though.
Yeah, it does.
Mm.
So everybody's different. So
right.
Not to show that there's that fixed menu of the night. This is what I do for the night.
Mm.
I will change slightly through the night. That's why it's only 8 people a night. So I could see the people and what they like, what they dislike, and the situation as the dinner goes by.
Mm.
And so everybody did not get the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So the seat to fill the empty part, it can be Japanese and New York style, but can be the food and the guest feeling too.
The guest feelings and everything, yeah.
Mm.
The whole thing, the atmosphere.
Mm.
And yeah.
Yeah, I think it's pretty common to find 8 seats restaurants in Kyoto.
Yeah.
Right. So why 8 seats, not 10 or not 6? So any reason for that?
Well, I was doing 7. 7 is a very good number, lucky number. But it happened to be 2, 2, 2, 2 every night, so it just happened to be 8.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right. Well, some people like solo dining, including myself. But yeah, that makes sense. Right. But then if it's 8, you can customize.
Yeah.
Pay attention to each one of them. Mm. Yeah, I think that's another reason that people tend to prefer very specialized style of cuisine, mm-hmm. like tempura, sushi, mm-hmm. or unagi, and then have only small place.
Yeah, that's right.
And next night, there's no Japanese mm-hmm. Asian concept, but mm-hmm. you go to tempura, you go to sukiyaki.
Yeah.
So that's a specialization, and then you get full attention from the chef.
Yeah, and sometime at the beginning of the dinner, I hear the couple talking about, oh, I didn't get eat tempura in Kyoto this time, and I'm leaving Kyoto. If I hear this comment from the customer, maybe I can send out tempura that later in a later. I can customize that, the course through the night, not pre-prepare everything.
Mm.
I can change it slightly through the air course.
Right.
And just 2 hours or 3 hours of the air course.
Mm. Improvisers, like with jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, according to your website, you're trying to create more fun and stylish space than mm-hmm. classic Japanese restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And I could guess, according to what you just said,
yeah.
but how do you do so?
It's just like I say, like, I mean, it depends on people. You never know what kind of customer you get until you see them and you talk to them
mm.
and actually you feel them. Then I decide what I can do, not only about the cooking, but about the volume of the music and how the speed of sending out their food.
Mm.
And those a lot of little things. I change it. I do it after that I see the customer.
Mm.
And I don't have any set menu in my restaurant, not even the drink menu.
Mm.
Because every day I just go to the market and get the good ingredients and just prepare and then think about what to cook for the night.
Mm. Right. That makes me think of what you earlier mentioned. That's New York style entertainment
mm-hmm.
because the music.
Yeah.
Which is... Sometimes it is no, I think, I don't know, the percentage of restaurants in Kyoto playing music.
Oh, there's really a, yeah, it's like 50-50, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you hold, like, pick up the sound
mm-hmm.
and element. And also, one thing I think you mentioned before the show we're talking, you know, you present food
mm-hmm.
differently.
Yeah.
And you said, so if you have the same name, dish,
mm-hmm.
a traditional Kyoto dish.
Mm-hmm.
And if you compare now and 10 years ago, 100 years ago, mm-hmm. they keep changing. So
yeah, in the image, the Kyoto food is a very tradition. It doesn't change. They keep the same style for years and years. And that's one thing. But as you explained just now, there's a same dish, has the same menu. But if you see the food magazine about 10 years ago, and 50 years ago, and the same dish, same menu, same name is changing when you see the picture and how you present. And that's the growth of the culture.
Mm, what tradition?
Yeah, tradition, yeah.
Because mm. I think I and a lot of people tend to think Kyoto is, you know, the essence of tradition,
yeah. and
but
a little closed to the new thing,
mm.
but it's nothing like that.
Right? Do you have an example of that old dish keep changing?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's at this season. There's a fish called hamo, which is a spike fish, and it's a very very traditional. It's one of the most popular soup oan,
mm.
which use a hamo with a junsai, which is a lotus leaf. Hamo and the junsai soup. Is maybe you'll be served in every restaurant you go to Kyoto at this time, but it's the same soup, but it's different every restaurant.
Mm.
And now it's different in different restaurant. If you think of the past,
mm.
it's slightly different. And if you go more past, it's different.
Mm.
And if you go to future, I never seen future yet, but if you go to future, I know it's different. It's something new. And yeah.
So perhaps dashi base and the combination of hamo and junsai, they're
yep.
the three unchanged elements.
Mm-hmm.
But the style presentation
mm-hmm.
or the size of the fish or...
Size of the fish and how do you flavor it, like salt in it and you poach it before you do it or you sear it. The fish
mm.
and you steam it and the little techniques are different and that make that big difference.
Mm, interesting. Yeah, I want to talk about that element of, you know, how you advance Kyoto cuisine, right, among
mm-hmm.
Younger chefs
mm-hmm.
because it's not uncommon to find 10th generation,
mm-hmm.
15th generation chefs in Kyoto. So how are they struggling right now to try to do something new?
Well, these days, not like that before. Now, they get all the information from TV or the internet, and they see a lot of chefs from outside the country successing and in a great way. And the Kyoto chef from those days, from the traditional restaurants, they are struggling because they know what they are good at, but they don't know how to show it, entertain it to the people, for the people to understand it. And that's what they're struggling. And that I'm not trying to help them, but I want to do something together with those chefs to see the next stage for the tradition, next stage for the tradition.
Because you don't have no binding kind of elements or tradition from succession.
Yeah.
And each restaurant with long history has some styles that they have to preserve.
Yeah, they have to keep. And so changing is not the way they should do it, but they're growing, and is what they should do.
Right. But it's a fine line between changing and advancing and destroying the tradition. Right.
So, I think it's difficult,
But are they open to change, challenge? And then I'm sure, though, people try, and then the father says, no, that's not the way to do it.
Yeah.
So back and forth.
Back and forth, but maybe you take three steps forward, and you take two steps back.
Right.
But after all, that makes one step forward.
But a major group of Kyoto chefs invite chefs from outside Japan, and then they train together.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, it's not just the younger generation, but more coordinated efforts in Kyoto.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so what elements of New York style cuisine attract you, and what elements of traditional Japanese cuisine attract you?
New York, especially, I mean, it's like an orchestra in New York cuisine. When I talk about cuisine, I don't want to talk only about the dishes. It's like the orchestra. You get the chef, and the waiter brings it, and the manager entertain the customer, and even the customer themselves are part of the orchestra. And it's like a scene in a movie. I feel like an actor when I work in New York. I'm part of, and I act on my act.
So interaction creates the dinner at the same time, not just on the plate.
Yeah. And in Japan, and I'm doing a modern Japanese restaurant now, but I started a modern Japanese restaurant in Kyoto 7 years ago in Takara, and before I started Another Sea. And it's same modern Japanese restaurant. The concept and the name is same, the modern Japanese. But I don't know if it's only in Japan, but even in the 3 years of Another Sea, it has changed a lot. And what changed it is the customer. The customers, the one word of the customer changed my whole dish. And one word of the customer make me stay with the modern Japanese. Some people say, you should change a little bit of this. Now, I'm not trying to listen to every single word that every customer says, but some of the word really hits my heart. And it's just like, sometimes you take a step forward, or you take a step back. But I'm still, after 7 years, doing the modern Japanese restaurant in Japan, I still feel like I want to continue. And that's what the customer is teaching me every day.
Right. Well, I found some examples of the dishes. There's a wild duck came straight from the hunter, local hunter, and soup of trout with milt. And you have a sirloin steak with kelp and red wine sauce, which is interesting. And a sandwich of monkfish liver. That's like a very essence of Japanese cuisine, but you combine New York elements. Right.
So it's more closer to Japanese food after all the 7 years. But like, as I say in the beginning, when I started the Takara, that my restaurant before, I sat on the table and looking at the notebook and thinking about what to cook with my brain, with my head. Now, I cook with seeing the ingredients and seeing the customer. So that's what's the difference. Thinking about a dish, looking at the notebook is not me. And when I cook, I look at the ingredients and the customer. So it's the same thing, more than Japanese restaurant, but it's a totally different thing.
So, I mean, we discussed the consistency, importance of consistency, but at this point, you are already consistency without thinking. So you can do that kind of, improvisation.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank God. Yeah.
So that's the meaning of training and experience.
I think so, yeah.
Right. So what is the importance of cooking in Kyoto for you?
There's a lot of professionals, and they're different, so different from what I do, but you got to respect the professional. And even though I've been cooking for 20 years, this seasonal thing, like the osechi, which is a very special Japanese dish you only eat at the New Year's. So even though it's been 20 years since I started cooking as a chef, professional chef, I only experienced 20 times in 20 years. So, and I should not act like I know everything. So still now I go to the market every day and ask the fish professional what I should get today. Sometimes they offer me super expensive fish that I say, wow. But I try it, and I learn something from it. I don't try to do what I know. I want to be taught by people. I still want to be taught and learn from them. And even the beef too. I know a lot about it. I've been using it for a lot of years.
You mentioned earlier it's a Satsuma Kuroge Wagyu.
Yeah.
That's a black hair from the Kyushu.
Yeah.
Wagyu beef. So it's like a fatty Wagyu.
Yeah. But I served the steak at the beginning of the course. The first dish I served is a steak.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What is that? What's the reason for that?
Enjoy the strong strong ingredients while your stomach is still healthy.
Maybe that's a very New York idea.
Yeah.
Right. Also, I'm just so jealous that you can have a Kyoto vegetables, Kyo yasai. Right? It's about like 40. The government designated special variety of vegetables. Right? So are they easily available all the time?
Yeah, and Kyoto vegetable, Kyo yasai, is very special in the Kyoto people and in Japan too. But what I use now is just like a potato or onion that's grown in the Kyoto vegetable farm on the side that the farmers grow in their private. So garlic that's grown in the Kyoto vegetable, they use the same earth and they grow in the side of and they are fantastic. And their price is so low and it's very economic and it's fantastic. Just a potato, just an onion. But I go pick myself like once a week, and makes me surprised.
Well, I have an impression that you have a closer relationship with farmers and other purveyors.
Yeah.
In Kyoto than here.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because of a close network or the geographic condition?
Just like I say, I mean, I don't go ask for what I think I want. I go there and to be taught. And a lot of people like that. And they teach me if I ask to be taught.
So you have a closer distance physically.
Yeah.
And then they're willing to teach chefs. That's kind of a tradition in Kyoto. Wow, amazing. Okay. And so how do you describe your identity as a chef? Do you think you're a Japanese chef or American chef? And what advantage do you have as with that identity?
Well, it's difficult, but like I'm a Japanese chef who was growing in New York as a childhood and trained in Japan and worked in New York and opened up a restaurant in Japan.
Mm.
So nationality is Japan, and then open-minded at like New York. And yeah, mm. So I don't say which. As I say in the before the show, I call myself New Yorker in Kyoto.
Mm.
And I call myself, I'm from Kyoto in New York.
Mm. It sounds like you're really enjoying that unique identity, mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, two sides of one
yeah.
personality. But it's just fascinating to have that, and you can be flexibly, you know, utilizing your unique background.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love my stance right now.
Mm. Right. And you came to New York this time to offer a dinner party in Finger Lakes and in New York. And could you tell us the details for the event? Unfortunately, when this episode goes mm-hmm. on air, the event is done.
But oh, sure.
You might come back later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is the event?
I was in Kyoto. I was offering New York wine with my friends who sells the New York wine in Japan. And we used to do an event in Kyoto. I've done 5 events so far in this year and a half. And doing with I was offering this New York wine with the very tradition Kyoto people, doing a collaboration with the Yuba, which is tofu skin.
Mm-hmm.
The Yuba place, which lasting for 200 years. And Nishin Soba, which is soba. And this place is open for 150 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to, and my cooking style and their collaboration and with the
so
New York wine.
So Nishin is a tiny fish.
Yeah.
But packed with the flavors.
Yes,
and,
very.
Goes well with the fingerling.
It does. Wine. It did. Mm. And this last March, and Chris Bates from Finger Lakes Table came to Japan, and we did a collaboration with the Kaiseki place called Suiren in Kyoto. So me and Suiren chef did a collaboration with the Foodwise, and Chris did a pairing with it.
So Chris is a sommelier?
Yeah, he's a master sommelier, and he's the owner chef of the Finger Lakes Table.
Right, but how did you guys meet?
We just happened to meet. And then I just said, it was first time, I met him for first time that March. And
in Tokyo?
In Kyoto.
Oh, in Kyoto. So
yeah.
You're introduced by somebody in common.
Yeah, and this is my friend called Goto-san, and who sells, who's importer of the New York wine in Japan.
How is New York wine doing in Japan?
It's doing okay. It's still not the most famous wine yet, but it's okay. Yeah, it's a great quality.
Yeah,
and it's fun.
I can't agree more. I think, you know, this northern cooler climate
mm-hmm.
goes well with the subtle flavors of Japanese cuisine.
Yeah, it's so simple, New York wine. It's not complicated, so it matches well with Japanese cuisine.
Not too oaky, not mm-hmm. too...
Yeah.
Right, the buttery or... Yeah, I did a Long Island article before.
Oh, really?
And I was fascinated.
Oh, great.
Yeah, but I haven't been to Finger Lakes, so next time you come back, you do the event.
Yes.
I will definitely be there. Okay, and by the way, you cooked another sea style cuisine.
Yeah.
At the event.
Sorry, yeah. This is time I wanted to introduce Japanese style my way.
Mm.
So I brought the fish called madai, which is red snapper. It's like the symbol of Japanese cuisine.
Mm.
And I did 7 course. We're using the red snapper.
Wow. So one ingredient, one theme. And kind of sounds like very Kyoto, season-oriented Kyoto style.
But it's June right now. But I didn't want to do only the June thing. I wanted to show what red snapper can do through the whole year.
Mm.
So I show from the spring to the winter in the first dish. Only in sushi, I showed 4 different kinds using the same fish. But showing the season, because the season is a very important thing in Japanese cuisine.
And in Kyoto, they say 24 to 36 seasons a year.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so what is your plan? Do you want to come back to New York, open a restaurant, maybe?
Oh, my plan now is to do 100% every day. Mm. And if I have an opportunity to do in New York, I'll try that 100% too. Mm. And I don't know what I'm doing next year, but hopefully I'll be able to come back with that event. And since I do that for a few times, maybe somebody will take me to some different stage, just like people did to me before.
Exciting. You have two different stages, at least in your
great,
life.
Great, yeah.
So. Hi. Okay, and so for listeners who wants to visit another city, where exactly is another city located in Kyoto?
It's located at the Sanjo Kiyamachi, which is a very, very central of Kyoto, right by Kamo River, right by the big bridge, in the corner of Sanjo Kiyamachi. And it's the fourth floor of the building, northeast building.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? It's like in New York, most restaurants, almost like 99%, seems to be located on the first floor. But in Japan, there are many restaurants are located above level, higher levels.
And they want to be hidden.
Mm.
Yeah. You don't want to be seen by other people, and you don't want to be known by other people that you are eating there that night.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. So what's the website's address of Another Sea?
AnotherSea.net.
Okay, .net. Great. All right, so thank you so much for joining us today, Dan.
Thank you very much for having me.
Please keep us posted.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@theheritageradionetwork.org or akikoatema.com. And Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays, although today was pre-recorded, and always available at theheritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. And our engineer is David Tadasuro, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.